Hello, today is October 21st, 2020, and today's guest is a mental health therapist, author, and mother. Welcome, Jasmine. How are you?
Hi, Margaret. I'm doing well. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. I just actually had a meeting. So at like 7:30 in the morning until like 9:30. And then I was like, okay, now I have to do this podcast. And then I'm doing
I'm redoing another
podcast with my boyfriend because he's acting so awkward around it. And I'm like, just be yourself. And he's like, I can't be myself. I'm like, oh. So we've been redoing it like at least 3 times, the podcast with him.
Oh my goodness, no pressure, right?
No pressure. But I try to make him like more comfortable. So towards the end, it was like a bit more comfortable, but we have to redo the first part. And
okay.
But it's been pretty good. How have you been?
You know, being as well as we possibly can during these times.
Yeah,
that's for sure.
What have you been doing to like, I guess, ground yourself during these times?
Self-care is number one. I even tell my clients that, like, even though I'm a therapist, like, I still have to make sure I'm taking care of myself. I have a therapist. Like, every therapist has a therapist. That's just the way it is. It keeps us grounded. It keeps us sane.
Yeah.
And, you know, surrounding myself with people, with positive people and those that bring good energy my way.
Yeah. I think like when you're a mental health therapist, you help like so many people heal and like you're helping them with their own personal journeys, but we also need that self-care as well. We also need that comfort and we need somebody to talk to. And just because I think we have like that degree doesn't mean that we can't seek that help from others as well.
Absolutely. Absolutely. We're human too.
Yeah.
I think sometimes people forget that.
Yeah. I think when you're in that field, I think people do tend to forget. And then they're like, oh, you know everything. And I'm like, we don't know everything.
Right. Like, don't give me that much credit. Come on.
Well, moving on. So we met through, I forgot that one instance. It was, I think it was the Empowering Women page. I forgot.
Yeah, it's the Women Empowerment with Juliana and Kate. They're so awesome.
Yeah, they are. I haven't spoken to them for a little bit, but I should probably reconnect. And then they promoted you on their Instagram. And then I basically found you through them and because I tagged you. And then I was like, oh, this is like, seems cool. And I want to like read her book. And yeah, so that's how pretty much we connected was through social media. And I think just starting off with my first question, what made you write a book?
So the journey for Wonderful Trips started, I would say, a little over a year ago. Mm-hmm. I had just given birth to my son. And I was experiencing some heavy symptoms of postpartum depression. And once I was able to get out of that, that whole experience just made me realize the importance of having a support system.
Mm-hmm.
Because without my support system, I don't even like to think about, you know, where I could have been. But once I was able to overcome that, it made me realize that women need more support for each other. And I created a Facebook group for women, and it was just, you know, networking, a way for women to express themselves. And based on the information that I received from that Facebook group, I was like, wow, you know, this is really good material. And then from there, I created a survey, and it basically posed different questions and asked women, you know, what were some of the barriers that prevent us from being full, for being our full functioning selves. And based on that information, I used it, and that's how we got the Wonderful Trip.
Yeah, that's beautiful. I just love that it started from like one thing, and then you were like, oh, it, and then it kind of brought you more opportunities, and then that's when that creative spark came to you.
Right.
Yeah. And I've even myself, I kind of experienced that where one, I started one project and it kind of wasn't the way it, I wanted it to be, but it kind of led me to a path of like where I wanted it to be, if that makes sense.
No, it does. It totally makes sense. It's a domino effect. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And sometimes I would kind of like, I don't know if you went through this, but I would kind of get a little bit upset if that one thing didn't work out. But I think it was supposed, I realized it kind of leads you to that greater purpose of what it was supposed to be.
Right. No, it does. It really does.
So, in the book, you talked about, I guess, like the, like certain friendships you had. I remember there was like Fickle Fran. I remember Fickle Fran, and then I remember who else. What I do remember her, and then who else can you name? I'm trying to remember that.
Well, good old Fickle Fran, and then we have Betty and Wanda.
Yeah, I remember those. And so I know you in the book you talked about it, but I guess on this podcast you can, the question leading up to it is, have you experienced fake women empowerment or just, you know, bad friendships with other women?
Oh, that's a good question. Yeah, I have. The most recent experience that I had was actually with a friend where, well, we're no longer friends, but that's okay. I think we had two different views of what women empowerment was, which is totally fine, you know. But in friendships there has to be, you know, acceptance of one another, and I don't think this person was able to do that. But long story short, there was a meme that was circulating throughout social media, and it basically said that if a woman is with a man, then she should not have to pay for anything. If he can't afford her, then he shouldn't be dating. It was something along those lines. So, I commented. A few other people that I know commented, and you know, I just posted my perspective of it, and I said that, I think it's really important for women to have financial stability on their own and not to depend on a man or anyone for that matter, to take care of them, because I've just seen it go left so many different times. Women get in relationships and, you know, it's like putting all your eggs in one basket. And then let's say the other person no longer wants to be in the relationship, you know, for whatever the reason is, and then the woman is left with nothing.
Right.
So, it's kind of along the lines of like Prince Charming comes in and sweeps her off her feet. But I think, especially in this day and age, women are fully capable of being their own superheroes. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that was my take on it. And this person got upset, and she said, how am I supposed to support women empowerment when I don't support women being spoiled? And I'm like, that's totally not what I said, nor is that, you know, that isn't what I meant. There's nothing wrong with being spoiled in a relationship, but I also feel like, you know, what's wrong with men being spoiled by their women as well? I think it should go both ways in a healthy relationship. But needless to say, she didn't like what I said, and that was the end of that friendship.
So. Oh, really? Oh, because of that, it ended?
I mean, I think that was just a factor of it. Because again, I know the way that I think can be totally different from the way that others view, you know, women's rights. Mm-hmm. And just feminism as a whole.
I mean, unfortunately, you know, I think like text messages and like seeing something that somebody wrote can be misconstrued a lot of times. And I think, you know, I feel like the mature way I feel like she should have approached it was just contacting you and just being like, and being upfront and saying like, hey, like, what did you really like mean by that? Because a lot of friendships and a lot of relationships end because of, you know, most of the time it's miscommunication.
Exactly.
And, you know, that's why, like, I prefer, like, if we have, like, deep conversations or if I want to talk to somebody, like, I prefer it, like, either over the phone or, like, in person. Because, like, through text, like, talking about issues like that, it can be very misconstrued and misinterpreted the wrong way. And I used to have a friend like that where she would, like, text things and I would tell her, hey, like, hey, stop, like, I don't like that. Like, I don't really like that. I prefer, like, if we have these deep conversations or if there's something that's bothering you, like, I'd rather you tell me in person than telling me through, like, a text message.
No, I completely agree, Margaret. And then even with that whole situation, I had said, hey, if there's more that you'd like to talk about, give me a call. Like, let's talk about this. Like two mature women, and that it just never happened. I got like 8 text messages of bashing and everything in between. It, you know, I didn't even read all the messages. That's how just mean and degrading it was. But
yeah,
you know, you live and you learn. It's fine.
Yeah, it's it's interesting. So I had a friendship that ended a couple of months ago. We were friends for quite a bit of time, but. I just felt like, I don't know, I'm a very like intuitive person. So I just felt like at times it was very like one-sided. Like I was kind of more giving and then I just felt like it wasn't like reciprocated the way I wanted it sometimes. Or I would tell like certain boundaries, like, hey, I don't like that. Like, and then she would kind of like keep doing it. Or just certain like things are like very misconstrued. Like I would kind of bring up the situation and then she would bring up another situation I did like that wasn't even related to the topic like 8 or 9 months ago that happened. And then I was like, well, why are you bringing it up now? Like, you know, she was kind of like bottling these things in whatever she was upset about. And we were living together and ultimately it was just like I felt like I was being gaslit a lot. I was felt like I wasn't like being heard, and I kind of respectively told her, I think it was like 2 weeks prior to moving out, that we can't like live together anymore, like, you know. And she didn't take it very well, obviously. And at that same day she like lost her job, and she pretty much like ran out. And she didn't have to move out, but she pretty much packed her bags and like left within 4 or 5 days. So she pretty much left, like she had 2 months to leave, but she left within like 5 days. Like she was already gone, like all her stuff was already gone by the time I was there.
Goodness.
Pretty much like she was just giving me, during that 5 days, she was giving me a lot of attitude. I remember she was like cutting off the AC on purpose when I turned it on, and it was just a lot. Like emotionally it was a lot. Yeah, and it's like 95 degrees outside, and
I guess she was like, we're all gonna be hot in here today then.
Yeah, and I don't know, it was just very, I don't know, I wish there she would like express to me what was bothering her prior, because this was clearly like a buildup, from certain situations. And I was just like, this living situation is just not working out between us. And she just took it very personally, and I kind of had to do what was right. And pretty much like you said, like I would say a month later she sent me like these nasty text messages that were just degrading, just like slandering my character that wasn't even like necessarily true, just how she perceived it. And I pretty much just ultimately like blocked her because she kept messaging me a lot, and I just felt like I was being like harassed a lot on social media and like through text message,
which is, you know, that's horrible, because it sounds like your situation was very similar to mine in the fact that a simple conversation could have resolved, you know, could resolve the issue, and it didn't have to go as far as it did.
Yeah. I tried to like conversate with her, but like there was just no, like, it was just very like tunnel vision. Like she was, and yeah, she was trying to do like a lot to like, you know, destroy me at that time. And I remember it was just very difficult. And I don't know, that was just something that could have been resolved through like a simple conversation instead of reaching it to that point. But I had, but unfortunately, like I said, we have to like part ways and like live as far as like living together, because this is clearly not working out.
Right. And good for you for setting boundaries. You know, and in true friendships, if you let a person know that they're doing something that is, you know, that's unhealthy to them, or vice versa, they tell you, hey, you saying this or doing this is hurting me. You know, yeah. if your intentions are pure and genuine, then you're going to make the effort to make sure you don't do those things anymore to hurt them.
So, yeah. And I just felt like it was best to, I don't know, be apart. Like, maybe, like, we wouldn't be as close friends anymore. Mm-hmm. But I just think for, like, my mental health and, like, whatever she was going through and her mental health, it was better to be apart. But she took it very personally and took it as if I, like, backstabbed her in that way. Mm-hmm. But I'm like, well, I need to set boundaries. Like, we can't, like, live together, and I can't keep on living with you.
About boundary setting, and I said that, you know, if you tell a friend that something that they're doing is bothering you, and vice versa, you know, you make the effort to change it.
I definitely agree, because I think the way we need to, instead of like, I guess like jumping into conclusions, you know, about certain things, like we need to talk it out, because whatever you perceive might not be the correct thing. So instead of just kind of like, you know, rushing into like assuming this, like, hey, like, let's talk this out, like, you know, as human beings, as individuals. And I don't know, that's how I want to do it. Like, I don't want to just assume. Like, I would rather like call a person or just talk to them and be like, hey, like, let's talk this out. Mm-hmm. Like, we don't have to jump into these type of like conclusions.
Exactly. And I, you know, I'm guilty of doing that. I've definitely done that in the past, where, you know, there's been a conflict or something that transpired, and I would just,
yeah, I would do the same thing, and that wasn't a good trait. You know. I would be kind of like, I don't want to talk to you, like, I'm good. That was more of like my style, and then I kind of realized like that's not like healthy, because if you're being, that's like being passive aggressive towards the other person, and then it just kind of hurts their feelings. So it's not really a healthy way as well. And I think recognizing that and just trying to implement that in like your like the relationships you have or like future relationships will be beneficial.
For sure.
Yeah. And I think like moving on to the next topic, like, what does loyalty mean to you? As far as like your friendship, your relationships, maybe even family as well.
Oh, that's a really good question. So you know, in the wonderful trip, I identified two different types of loyalty. Mm-hmm. So you have, you know, obligatory loyalty and non-discriminatory loyalty. So obligatory loyalty is, it's like, oh, well, since we've been friends for so long, I'm gonna just go along with what you say because I don't want to hurt your feelings. Mm-hmm. And non-discriminatory is gonna be like, look, yes, we have been friends for a really long time, but I'm gonna tell you what's right, and that's because I love and I care about you. So I think sometimes, and I even in the chapter where I mentioned fickle friends, I think that we both had obligatory loyalty towards each other, because there were things that I would see her say and do, but I wouldn't, I don't want to say correct her, but I wouldn't handle it in a certain way because of fear of hurting her feelings, or a fear of putting the friendship in jeopardy. And it's funny when you look back on it now, I'm like, well, maybe that could have saved the friendship if I had been more honest with her.
So I do remember that in the book, and it kind of reminds me, so I started re-watching, they put Girlfriends on Netflix.
Oh, Margaret, I'm binging on that right now.
I'm on season four. Because so when I watched it when I was younger, obviously, like, when it came out, this was like on regular like TV, so if you like missed the show, then like you're probably not gonna see the episode again like for a while. So you would just, I would see like the episodes like pop up like every now and then. And then I would watch it, but now I'm like watching it straight on Netflix, and it's quite interesting, like watching it as like a, like when you're a kid, and then watching it as like a grown adult. It kind of reminds me of Joan. I would say the first and second season, she had like no boundaries with it was so bad. Honestly, it was kind of like painful to even watch at times, because it was so bad. Like, she had no boundaries. Like, she was kind of labeled as like the mother of the group, and she kind of just like, she would rather deal with like her toxic friendships than like losing that friend, which like resulted her, like, she was just very like codependent, even though she was a successful lawyer.
Absolutely. Yeah, she was. Oh, Joan.
Yeah, Joan, and then there was Tony, and then she just let her, like, you know, do whatever. Like, Tony, like, got with one of her exes, and then she tried to sleep with her boyfriend, and then she was, like, taking money, like, she was borrowing money, and then Tony was just, like, you know, she was that one friend, like, who wanted that life of luxury, but she just didn't. I guess, like, she spent so much money on it, she wasn't saving her money. Like, she was just obsessed with material things. So, I don't know. I think it's definitely, you have to put boundaries. And Joan kind of, I think each of those women kind of represent what, you know, friendships even I had, and then sometimes even myself as well.
I think that if you had to say which of the girlfriends, like was a reflection of you, who would you say it was?
I would say, like, I'm a combination of Lynn and Maya. Maya's my favorite, though. I think everyone relates to Maya in some way. But I would say Lynn has just more of like a laid back personality, and that's what I have. But like, the only thing is, Lynn is like lazy, and when I was younger, I was like, I'm gonna be honest, I was like a bit lazy, and my parents would get at me because I was so lazy. They're like, you're so lazy. And I don't know, I kind of grew over that period. That was when I was like younger. But I would say I have more of like her like laid back personality, and then my personality kind of developed towards like Maya, where I was just, I had boundaries, and I don't know, I just like her character. Like, she's just like very relatable, very like, yeah, I would say she's like the least, like, has like the least issues, like, compared to like the other three women.
And yeah,
she, I don't know, there's just something about her character where I'm like attracted to her character. What about you? Who do you say you relate to?
I would say a mixture between Joan and Maya, actually.
Okay.
Yeah. Maya, because Maya was always outspoken, and I think I had to grow into that.
Exactly.
I recall, like, when I was younger, I was afraid of my voice, for various reasons. I didn't want to point anyone. And then I would say the part of Joan is very ambitious and career driven, and I've always been that way to Joan. And then even the boundaries, I don't think I was as bad as Joan, but over the years I've definitely learned how to develop boundaries and stick with them.
Yeah, I, you know what, looking back at it, I was like the Joan, like, way younger, like, all of those things that she did, like, I was going, like, I was kind of going through, and I kind of, I don't know, I was, like, the people pleaser. Like, mm-hmm. I was kind of, like, I don't want to lose my friends, so I'd rather just be stuck in these, like, toxic relationships because of what we went through. Right. And then, you know, I remember everyone was telling me, like, oh, you need to kind of, like, separate yourself, and then I was, like, no, like, I don't want to. And then I would say my character did build over time, which kind of like created Maya, and mm-hmm. then also just like more just laid back Lynn. But I would say like I would say starting at like 21, 22 is when I became very career driven, and I just became very passionate mm-hmm. About those things. So about like investing in myself, investing in my career. So I guess I'm a little combination of all of the women in some way.
Yeah, because like, but Tony, I like nice things too.
I like to be bougie and like right. I like to be pampered. Like I can be very like bougie. Like I have friends, they're like, you're so bougie. So I don't know. I think I'm just like a combination of each of these women in some way.
But, you know, I think that was the angle of the show, was to show, you know, perspective. Like, women, we all have different sides to ourselves. And I think that's what makes us just as beautiful and wonderful as we are. Because
yeah.
women are multidimensional.
Yeah. And I think, like, I have to look also, like, at the year it was created. And mm-hmm. Because it was, like, in the early 2000s, like, 2001. Right. When this show started, so it was kind of interesting, like seeing like, oh, I'm gonna like get my pager phone and like Joan's like, I can't use a laptop, and it's just so different now.
In MySpace, like MySpace was around during that time.
I don't even think it was around. Like I think like when it first started the show, like it wasn't around. I feel like it started like in the middle of like when the show was around. Yeah. But it's crazy. And then also, like, they have, I would say Joan has very, like, traditional values of, like, what society mm-hmm. wants. Like, okay, get a career, have a kid by this age, like, get married by this age. And she couldn't accept the fact that it always doesn't turn out that way. Mm-hmm. But because society, especially in that time era, and then, like, before that, they really, like, okay, get married by this time, have a kid by this time, get a mm-hmm. successful career by this time. So she just had to go by the book. Like, she mm-hmm. was that type of person. Like, she even said in one of the episodes, like, she planned her whole life when she was like a kid,
which is scary, because if I had went by the plan that I had when I was a kid, I'd have a mansion, about five ponies, eat chocolate every morning. Like, that's a little scary.
Yeah, but she planned like her whole life. And I, you know what's funny, I met a man like that a couple of years ago, and he said he planned out like what school he wants to go to, like what he's gonna do, like it has to be specifically this. And I'm like, I don't know, I'm just that type of person where I think like we evolve over time, so some of the things we liked maybe 5 years ago is something we might not like 5 years later.
Right.
So it's quite interesting meeting people like that. I'm just kind of like, you know, you can plan out your goals and everything, but maybe like I feel like short-term goals are a little bit more realistic, and then whatever is like long-term, you know, kind of keep it like realistic. So
yeah, like you know, there's totally wrong with planning for future, but I also believe it's important to be flexible, because like you said, things don't always pan out the way that we want them to.
Yeah, and I feel like even like our society changes, because mm-hmm. what she wanted like could be like years later, like it could be something else. And like there's like when you find out there's different careers and things like that, because right now like a lot of people are doing things on social media. Before, people didn't do things on social media,
right?
And now that's kind of like changing, where people are trying to find like do like online businesses, or like do things from home, or mm-hmm. you know, things like that. So even our society changes, and like we might even change what we want to do yep. because of that. So I think transitioning to the next question is that during our Zoom call, we had a topic where we discussed about fear of using our voice, or, you know, using your voice in like work related, maybe our homes, like in our relationships. So maybe you can like elaborate on that for a little bit, the fear of using our voices as women.
Yeah. So I think that is, I think it's, that's definitely a fear in the workplace. I haven't experienced that as much because with therapy, it's a predominantly female driven career. So mm-hmm. Going to the office and talking to my supervisor and crying, and then, you know, she can cry with me and we hug it out and we're good to go. Mm-hmm. But I know in other careers, you know, especially in corporate America, where, you know, the boss is a male, like it's usually male dominated, that's not allowed, that's not accepted. Women are looked at as being weak or emotional. And making a girlfriend reference, there was an episode where Joan was other men, other lawyers, and she had an idea, and one of her colleagues like completely cut her off and said her idea, and then when she spoke up, they laughed, and you know, they said, "Oh, you know, you must be on your period or something like that."
Oh my gosh, I remember that.
Yeah, but you know, but that happens, like, you know, and that's why women fear speaking up certain situations because of how they're going to be perceived. Mm-hmm. And in The Wonderful Trip, I actually call them the four deadly D's. Mm-hmm. Women tend to be silent because there's a fear of disappointment, there's a fear of being perceived as a diva. You know, there's just so many different things. Like, women don't want to be, we don't.
Oh, sorry, you're getting cut off a little bit.
I'm sorry. No, I was just saying that, you know, there's just mm-hmm. a fear of being perceived a certain way. You know, being a fear of being of disappointment or perceived as a diva.
Yeah.
Or a damsel. Or difficult, you know. So I think that's because of those fears. You know, we tend to be silent.
Yeah, I would say when I started, like, when I was working, like, different jobs, like, in college and during that time, I wouldn't, like, speak up. Like, this was, like, in a circle of men and women. So, like, when I would say something, like, it was just kind of, like, mm-hmm. I wasn't being heard in that way. Or, like, I was, like, did they even, like, hear what I said? So, like, that's what I was thinking. And I was, like, oh, mm-hmm. my God. And then I would kind of get, like, very upset. Like, I would get so upset over it, and I was just scared of, like, how I was perceived. Mm-hmm. Like, I just wanted to be, like, that chill coworker, like, that just did my work, and I can be, but I also have to be, like, I have to play, like, different roles. Like, I can be, like, that chill coworker, but I can get the job done, and, like, I could be assertive. Like, I don't have to be loud, mm-hmm. or I don't have to be aggressive, but I have to, like, kind of raise my voice a little bit to be heard. It's like playing that, you know, kind of finding that in between where, you know, you can get along with everyone and also at the mm-hmm. same time being assertive and being heard. But I was, you know, I feel like I was focusing on one extreme and then the other extreme, and then I had to find that middle, where I could, you know, how I fit in and where I can, I guess I can just be heard properly without being, you know, too aggressive as well.
And you know, and when you speak about that, Margaret, you know, we might have people listening and thinking, oh, that sounds so simple, but it's really not as simple as we think it is, because we, you know, we learn our communication from, you know, of course we got to go back and blame our parents yeah. and family when we have issues, but you know, that's genuinely where it starts. Like, you know, in The Wonderful Trip, I even asked the question, like, think about the women in your life, whether it was your mom or grandmother or whatever woman that you were close to, what, you know, what were their speaking styles? Were they assertive? Were they aggressive? Were they passive? And compare that to the way that you speak. So I think that's why it's really important for women to utilize their voice, but to also, you know, making sure that we're using it as a tool and not so much a weapon.
So looking back, like, to my family at least, so interesting, because when I grew up, I was just very shy, because I guess, like, my voice, I didn't want to, like, deal with confrontation. Like, my sister, she was just, like, a very opinionated person. Like, if it was her way, it was the no way. My mom was the same way. Like, she, like, did not give, like, two shits. Like, she, there was, like, one part. I mean, she's a lot better now, but my mom used to be super, super aggressive. And she, I remember, there was this woman, she was, like, I guess, like, guiding people out of, like, the parking lot, and she was just, like, a random woman, and my mom was like, what is she doing? And she literally, like, stepped out of her car and was, like, about to fight her, Jasmine. Like, I'm, like, not kidding you. And I was young, and I was, like, in the middle school, and I was like, oh my god. And I remember I was just so afraid of, like, telling her anything because of that. Like, those are just one incidences. Like, there was, like, a part where I failed, like, my, like, driving test, and she literally was just going in on me. Like, she was, like, yelling. Like, she was like, you didn't study, blah, blah, blah. Like, it was really bad. Like, it was just to the point where I was afraid to, like, speak up. That's how it kind of, like, because of that, that's how it kind of ran through, like, my adulthood. And that's where I had to grow up to be, I guess, like, more assertive, but in, like, a kind and respecting way, not like how my mom was, like, back in the days.
Yeah, your mom seems intense. Like, she plays no games.
No, she was that type of woman. Like, I remember we went to Mexico and these guys scammed us, and she literally was, like, yelling at the whole hotel, like, you scammed us. And I mean, it was true. Like, they did scam us, but the way she, like, approached it, like, they were all, like, afraid of her. And then they were like, okay, well, here's, like, a free, like, massage and free scuba diving lesson. Cause they took, like, they scammed, like, $200 from her, and she was, like, not having it. Like, she was just that type of woman, like, where she will, like, speak her mind. And if, like, something, like, is bothering her, like, she'll say it. But the way she did it was just so, like, not in the right way. And I think, like, we had a strained relationship, and now it's a lot better, but when I was younger, it was very difficult telling her anything. Yeah, but going forward, we're gonna, the next relationship, the segue to that is parenting style, so boys versus girls.
Oh, that's an interesting
And maybe you can, I mean, I don't have kids, but maybe you can elaborate a little bit, because I know you have a son.
He's two. Let's see, as far as the parenting styles go, I even see it sometimes in my own household, and I have to call it out, because I know I grew up in a home where my parents are very loving. We say I love you every day, every time you get off the phone. They're very, you know, they give hugs, they give kisses, they give pep talks.
So, moving on to parenting styles, boys versus girls.
Yeah.
And you have a son. So maybe you can elaborate, maybe with different parenting styles, especially what you've seen from other parents, and, you know, even society as well.
I have a son, he's two, and I notice, you know, and my husband and I have even had this conversation about the way that I was raised and the way that he was raised. Like, he grew up with multiple siblings. And he is the oldest boy in his family. So, versus the way that I grew up as an only child, but I had two gentlemen that I knew from church since I was maybe like 8 or 10. And so I consider them my brothers. Like, that's how close we are. But you know, like I said, in the household, it was just me and my mom and dad. And with them, I remember, you know, they were very affectionate, hugs, kisses, pep talks, all that good stuff. But, you know, talking with my husband, he didn't receive, you know, that much. It seemed like it was more tough love. So with us raising our son together, I can see little bits and pieces of the parenting styles that we received implemented into our kid.
Yeah.
Oh, our poor kid. Oh. No, I'm kidding. But so I'm very affectionate. I'm very affectionate towards our son, Santana. That's his name. So I'm very affectionate towards him. The moment he falls, I want to pick him up and kiss his knee or whatever. But my husband's like, no, let him fall. Let him get back up by himself. You know, those things build character. So I think, you know, typically boys are taught to be tough. You're not supposed to cry as much. Versus girls, I think it's just more acceptable. And we even see that with adults, with men.
Yeah.
You know, I think there's been a shift. I'm seeing a shift as far as therapy goes, but I still know a lot of men that will not talk to a therapist because they see it as a sign of weakness.
Yeah.
You know, I'm fully equipped to fix my own issues. I don't need someone else telling me how to fix my problems. They don't know me, you know. But if you hear a woman say that she's going to therapy, I think it's more accepted.
Yeah, I think as far as like therapy, like, and well, even for men, like they're kind of saying, well, boys have to be tough, and it's just kind of like ingrained in our society where boys can be tough, like we don't talk about our feelings, things like that. And even like my boyfriend, like when I first met him, he was like that. And then, you know, I kind of started opening him up to like different avenues. Like, this is okay. Like, like men can show like that side of them because, you know, we men have those suppressed emotions. And then they kind of were like, they dump all their emotions like on their girlfriend. Because they're like, that's all, because they don't talk about stuff like that with like their friends.
No, they don't.
Yeah, they don't at all. Like, even there's like a friend that my boyfriend has, and he has like certain like things he's going through, but I know like they don't talk about stuff like that, or like how like we can like heal together and things like that. I'm pretty sure they think like, oh, like no way,
right.
Like we're doing that. But it's really like you need that support system. And I always asked my boyfriend, he was like, oh, like you guys, like, what do you guys talk about? He's like, oh, you know, just like typical stuff. And I would talk with like my friends over on the phone for like 2 hours. He's like, what do you guys talk about for 2 hours? Like, I don't get it. He's like, I'm with my friends, like we're on the phone for like 10-15 minutes.
Like, well, you can't tell them, Margaret, what we're really talking about, because, you know, we're plotting to take over the world.
Yeah, we're pretty much, I feel like at this point women are like basically gonna take over the world. But I think now, like, they're, especially this year, I've noticed like this shift of like consciousness, and this shift of like, I guess, like men, like, you know, receive, having that feminine and masculine energy. You can have both, same as women. Like, you can have that masculine and feminine energy, and I feel like it's being more accepted now. Obviously, like, there's still work has to be done, but I don't know, I would say like from like 10 years ago, it was just totally different. And then 10 years later, like, therapy is more accepted even now. Like, I remember back in high school and things like that, like when you heard about therapists, you're like, what? Like, hell no, I'm not gonna go to therapy.
Right.
And now, like, therapy is like the thing now. And then you're like, oh, you go to a therapist? And you're like, yeah, I go to a therapist. Or there's even like different healing techniques, like you don't have to go to therapy. Like, one of my friends in the, she's on the second episode, she does like healing movements. So she does, like, when she feels her therapy is like running, Did like track in college, and she also does like dance, like healing as well. Like that's her therapy. So you kind of have to find like your lingo. Like it's not always just like a regular therapist. Sometimes it's, there's like so many different healing techniques that even I'm starting to discover. Like I never even knew that existed.
Yeah. And I think that's the beautiful thing. Cause all of those things tie into self-care, you know? So participating in something that makes you feel whole and makes you feel good about yourself, whether it's through therapy or running or speaking to people on podcasts, like whatever it is that you know, that brings you joy, it's all part of self-care.
Yeah, most definitely. And I think transitioning that to like the next topic is in your book you discussed about the toxic relationship you had with your ex, and I guess maybe just like elaborate, like maybe like quickly just what happened and then how did you heal, and then maybe like that spiritual awakening that happened after that.
Well, during that time, well, before I start dating him, I refer to him as Brisket in the book, because I met him while I was at a work event. It was like a Christmas party and he was a chef there. And he made this amazing brisket. So that's what I call him. But it was a delicious brisket. He didn't do anything else right in that relationship. He definitely knew how to cook.
That's good.
But like during that time when I met him, I was in grad school and I was wrapping up with my final courses. So I was like really high on my horse then. I had moved into my own apartment and I had a job that, you know, it wasn't paying a lot, but it was paying enough to manage my bills, and I was still able to travel and have fun. So I was really on my high horse. And so getting into that relationship and just watching the transition unfold, you know, it started off as sweet and charming, and then, you know, we would start, you know, spending a lot of time together, to the point where I was feeling suffocated. And later I realized that that's a red flag when you're spending all this time with this one person. But I think with that relationship, humbled me in that experience, because you know, he did turn out to be very abusive, but the abuse never happens overnight. There's always little things that we either see and we just ignore it, or, you know, we don't really pay attention to it because we're too close and too deep into the relationship. But Brisket had some very unstable moments. I know he had a bit of jealousy, just with our upbringings. Like I told you, I've been very blessed to grow up with both of my parents, and they've always been supportive of things that I wanted to do. But you know, with Brisket, he had a lot of childhood trauma, and so I think he would sometimes be a little jealous of the relationship that I had with not only my parents, but just people that loved me, you know, all together. I think he was a little envious of that. And then because, like I said, he had some childhood trauma, there was, you know, some sexual abuse involved. In his past, a lot of those things were unresolved for him. So I think that those unresolved traumas definitely played a role in the demise of our relationship, because, you know, studies show people, you know, especially with sexual trauma.
That's tough.
Yeah, you know, like, or people that have experienced some type of loss. You know, when in their childhood, they, you know, they can become, I'm not saying all, I'm just saying some can be, you know, become violent, because that's a sense of power and control. And I truly believe that was the case for Brisket. But it took one time, one physical altercation, and that was enough for me.
Yeah, I mean, I'm happy that, I mean, even like when I was reading the book, I'm happy that, like, not happy, but I guess in a sense where it happened once and you were like done, because I would hear so many stories of like women, like they would just kind of put, they would put up with it like very, like numerous times. And I'm glad that it was just that one time where you were like, I'm done. Like that's like, you put your hands on me and it's over, and you pretty much called it off. But you know, unfortunately, there's a lot of women that are still dealing with those type of relationships, and they feel like they have nowhere to go, and they're just kind of stuck in that type of physical abusive relationship.
Yeah, and it's, you know, it's really sad, because see, Briskin and I hadn't dated for that long. I want to say maybe like 6 months, maybe like 5 or 6 months. But like you said, there are other, there's so many other women that, that deal with this. And it's sad because, you know, abusers will typically remove them from their support systems. And, you know, they're manipulative. And these women start to believe that, you know, that they don't deserve better. And, that, you know, that's, it's really sad. And I want to say, don't quote me on this, but I want to say there's usually like 9 or 10 attempts before people actually leave these abusive relationships.
Yeah, that's crazy. Like, it takes that long. And I usually, when I watch, I mean, I haven't been in like a physical abusive relationship, but when I would watch them like on TV, it was like a pattern. Like, I noticed, like when they would get together, everything would be good. And then I would notice the man starts to get very controlling of like what that woman is doing. And then it kind of leads to an argument where she's like, you know, physically abused by him. And then he starts like, and then he apologizes and then he like does it again. And then he like apologizes, and then he kind of like manipulates her like into staying. And it's just like a very toxic like relationship. And then finally, after like, I like so many attempts, they leave. Like, that's usually what I would see like on TV, and like what other friends have told
me. Yeah, that's definitely, you know, cycle of abuse for sure.
Yeah, but it's kind of interesting, like we don't, I feel like when we deal with like either physical or emotional abuse, like it becomes such a norm that we're like, that we're so, we're used to it and we deal with it until like something just kind of triggers it, and then you kind of have, like, you leave.
Yeah, especially if it's something that you're used to. You know, think about people who grew up around, you know, grew up around people, or even in households where violence was the norm, abuse was the norm. And so, you know, if that's something that you experienced when you grow up, you know, you sort of feel like your relationship has to have that in order for it to seem normal.
Yeah. I think like when we get out of that those relationships and then we started going into like better relationships, you're kind of like, I don't know. I went through this phase where I had such bad relationships that when I started having a good relationship, like I was just like in such shock. Like I was literally, I remember I had this friend, he wrote to me like this card about like how grateful he was like to meet me. And I remember like none of my friends like really did something like that where I was truly appreciated. And I remember I was like in my car and I read it after work and I just started crying because I never experienced like something like that, where even like with my boyfriend, like he was like so kind to me, and I told him, I was like, I never had people like as kind as you like in my life. And he was like, really? And I was like, yeah.
And it, but that doesn't, that give you hope when you encounter people?
It did. Like when I met him, and like it kind of like had this domino effect of I started meeting people that were like, we kind of respected me as a person, and I could be comfortable around. And that's where like I started having like hope in like other people, and I started like trusting people more often. Right. Because when I was going through those tough times, like I felt like I just had no trust in a lot of people, and I was very guarded. And those like different like things that happened, like those different like happy seeds that the universe planted, was just kind of like that light of hope that I guess like, you know, I don't know, whatever somebody believes in, like God or the universe, but just like those certain things like happen, and then you start seeing like there's a lot of good in like people. I was just, I'm not gonna like, you know, lose myself because of some bad seeds that I encountered in my life.
Absolutely. And I think that is the beauty of it. Like you said, you know, God, the universe, however you want to put your spin on it, you know, we always, we encounter the people that we meet, whether it is for a season or for a lifetime. And I think that's what Brisk served for me. I think it was a way for me to remember to humble myself, because never in a million years would I have thought that something like that would happen to me. And it, you know, it also made me question my abilities as a therapist, because I'm like, you know, I was thinking to myself, girl, you should have saw this coming. Like, how could you not know? But during that time, and like I mentioned in the book too, but just during that time, whenever I did treat DV clients, it was always a pattern. It was either they grew up around abusive people, there was some type of like drugs in the mix. That was just a small population of DV survivors that I had counseled, so I didn't know. And like I said, I never grew up around that. My dad wasn't like that, and the men that I considered like brothers, they were absolute gentlemen. So that experience was just something totally new to me, but I'm thankful for it, because it has made me a better therapist, and it humbled me a lot.
Yeah, I think like that experience happened for you, so you can, I guess, like relate to other women, like when you're doing like giving that like session with them, because now you kind of like you experienced it in like, and then now you kind of know how to like help them get out of that situation, right. And you have more empathy for
absolutely.
Them.
Absolutely, I definitely do.
And like one of the quotes that I really liked in the book, which I put in like my empowerment and women page and also like my Instagram, is that it would be foolish to think that this place is utopian. Being full doesn't make us immune to the challenges of everyday womanhood, but capable of facing them. So empowerment requires maintenance. You will still navigate through fears and worries as they surface. And I think like the topic, you know, it's kind of related, because we, like, our society, I don't think it'll ever be as perfect as we want it to be. Like, we have our own different versions of what a perfect society is. And we're always going, even though we've, like, healed and we've, like, you know, we've experienced these things, like, there's always something that's going to happen, like, in our life. Like, we're probably going to maybe meet another bad friend, or maybe, like, we're going to have this type of argument. But I think it's being capable of fighting through that and knowing that, you know, how to navigate through those times and how to like settle it. Because I think like certain situations happen like in the past, and it was kind of almost repeated in the future. But I would say like it was just, I had like more calmness about it. I knew how to handle the situation.
Right. Like those experiences before were the like a practice test. And then when you're finally tested on it, you know the answers. You know how to pass it.
Yeah, because I think we're like every day, I think like life is just up and down. Like some days we're going to be happy and some days we're going to be sad. But I think just seeing the beauty of it and just knowing how to like maneuver through that.
Yeah, I agree.
All right. Yeah, so the last thing is, where can people follow you, your Instagram, and then like your website?
All right, so we're on a few platforms. The first is www.wonderful with two L's effect.com, and then we're on Facebook and Instagram with both of the names wonderful two L's dot effect. So you can find us there. Facebook, Instagram, and the website.
Yeah, and I'll put those up in the caption, and then I'll also put up a link for your book, the Amazon link as well, if you guys want to check out her book. It's a really good read, and I liked it because it was just so simple but yet so complex that I could just relate to
thank you so much, and I really appreciate you being supportive. It's just so funny how things work, because you're all the way in Arizona, right?
Yeah.
Yep. You're in Arizona. I'm here in Florida. So it's just funny how, you know, the book is making its way to different states. And I'm just completely appreciative of the love and support that Wonderful Effect has been receiving, and the wonderful trip. So thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. Well, I hope you have a good day, and I know you have to get going. You have a session soon, so. But it was nice having you.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
No worries. Right, you have a good day.
Bye.
Bye-bye.